You're listening to The Comedy Cellar, live from the table on the Riotcast Network, riotcast.com.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to The Comedy Cellar Show here on Sirius XM Channel 99. We're here at The Comedy Cellar, of course, with Dan Natterman, as always. We're very, very proud to have Mr. Ron Bennington of Sirius XM Radio. Are you on Channel 99? What channel?
We're just moving. We were on Channel 99. Now we're going to be on Faction. I think that's 106.
Faction?
Faction, yeah. It's the same place Jim Norton and Sam are.
Oh, you're leaving us behind. And Mr. Jared Fried.
Great to be here. Thank you for having me. Totes preach.
You have a Snapchat game show?
I got a Snapchat game show, yeah.
And he just came back from Vegas. So go ahead, Dan.
Now, Jared, I want you to be brutally honest with Noam because you're not doing him any favors by lying. Tell him how you might improve the gig, what was good about the gig, what was bad about the gig.
The gig was fun.
Oh, yeah.
The crowds got bigger every night.
Yeah.
I think the positives you heard were that it's a lot of locals, and that's very hard to do in Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone that walked out, the one thing they said, they couldn't believe how great the show was beginning to end. And I think that was a surprise for a lot of the people. Did you get that a lot?
I didn't hear those precise words, but everybody seemed happy with the show, that's for sure.
I got a lot of that where people go, I usually go to shows in Vegas, and sometimes the shows... It's not good throughout. And I think they were excited that it was always... They were surprised at the level of talent, that it was a good show throughout the show. I think I think for the comics perspective, it'd be great to be with people that you knew or were friends with.
Yeah, we've already discussed.
Are you saying you weren't happy there with Natterman?
I loved Natterman. I
was the only one.
Him and I at the pool, we were hanging.
Who else was there that week?
We had a great crew, but I'm saying it matters.
Doesn't sound like you had a great crew.
It did. It was a great crew, but
Des Bishop, Ruth, not Ruth.
Kathleen.
Kathleen Dunbar. I'm thinking of the
Dunbar.
Character.
Yeah. Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
No, I think Ruth Dunbar was a character in Bosom Buddies, I think.
Right. And
so listen, Dan loves to talk about Vegas. I'm not sure why he loves this
because
subject.
This is, again, I have to explain it to you every time, but our regular listeners, this is like a drama. Oh, they're opening up a club in Vegas. How's it doing?
I don't know.
What's going on?
What do you think, Ron? I don't think they care.
And yet you always question whether this is interesting, and yet you'll drone on about some arcane tax code change that Trump wants to institute, and you think that's just hunky-dory.
Natty Light saying this is a personal thing.
And especially now...
We could both be wrong.
Now, you said nice things about the gig, but now really let Noam have it.
There's nothing to have it about. There's nothing... I thought it was... The room is great. It sets up great. I had a great time. I think someone needs to be empowered there to like direct traffic in the crowd. I think that's the one thing. Someone has to have the power to say to a group, hey, keep it down, or, you know, there's got to be someone that's, you know, like the lead.
Yeah, we've had...
I mean, I know that's tough to do.
It's not a problem every night.
Not every night.
From time to time, it's a problem. From time to time, it's a problem here, too. But
sure.
In Vegas, Ron will like this because he's liberal. We have a big union problem.
Yeah.
And we are literally not allowed to say anything to the people. And
to the wait staff.
And the waitresses are not allowed to be asked to tell a customer to keep it down.
There was one night that was like the one night that I'm thinking of. And there was a big group.
Yeah.
And I, you know, spoke to them all on stage. I like made fun of them to get them to be quiet a little bit. But they... You know, and then I went, got done with my set, and Natterman was on stage, and I went to one of the security guys, and I go, you should really go say something. And he was like, and he kind of shook his head, and then just...
And went back to his iPhone.
Yeah, you know, went back to not doing anything. So it felt like he didn't even have the... He needed the go-ahead at some point, and it wasn't going to be for me. You know?
I'm probably not supposed to talk about it publicly, but this is a problem, and I don't know what to do about it.
Yeah.
Anyway, but.
But that's the one thing. That was the one thing and that I would like...
But no one ever policed the room during Frank Sinatra's days? I find this hard to believe.
That's when the mob ran things.
Yeah.
When times were good.
So I could go, like, to a Tom Jones' show and just start yelling shit out.
No.
And nobody would be allowed to say anything.
Well, the truth is, I don't think of you correct me wrong. I don't think it's so blatant as somebody yelling out, because I think then they would descend on him. It's the kind of in between where they're kind of talking too loud, but
I think it was all positive. You know, it was like a positive loudness. Like they're enjoying themselves. They were literally enjoying themselves.
You need somebody to stop the laughter.
Stop the laugh. It was too much laughter during my set. No, is really the issue.
Well, we have that problem a lot here.
Well, sometimes they can be enjoying themselves, but still talking too
loud. Yes, that was kind of, you know, it's like ambient noise where they're discussing a bit.
Yeah, well, there's two things. First of all, I have to say, all the shows, that I haven't seen that problem, and I've seen a lot of shows out there, just so you know. But the room was designed to be very loud for laughs.
Oh, it is.
And that may be a double-edged sword, as they say.
Yeah.
So it also might make just like a, because the laughs are really loud.
They
hit really
loud. Yeah. That is noticeable there.
So, but I don't know. So anyway, go ahead.
I just had one other Comedy Cellar related point to make. I noticed last week and this week there's shows around the corner at the Village Underground at 6 p.m. Is that a new thing?
This is a new thing, Dan.
This seems like it was written down.
For you people on the edge of your seat,
new announcement
drama, you're now going to know why we have added extra shows at Fridays and Saturday nights. Because when Jeff Ross and Dave Attell were doing their Netflix special last week, they wanted more time or whatever it was. And we didn't know how to fit it in. I said, well, let's just try a 6 o'clock show. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. Because I wanted to make sure that Jeff and Dave had with it. And sure enough, it sold out.
Shit.
And I said, shit, if we can do a 6 o'clock show, we can fit 4 shows in the Underground now Fridays and 4 shows Saturdays. So we're going to try it.
Of course, it's broad delight at that hour here in the summertime.
But, I mean,
so is
brunch. Yeah. And then also the Village Underground especially. The vibe there is very, like, nighttime no matter when you're down there.
Yeah, when you go into a basement, you forget. You go to a movie theater, you know.
Plus the music. It's a cool vibe. And 6 o'clock, that feels like... I've done shows on the road at 6 o'clock where they've done that, and they ended up being the best crowd of the weekend.
To be honest, we need the money to help pay for the losses in Vegas.
Boat floats another.
I literally thought to myself, you know...
Well, we'll never... Look, even if Noam's making money in Vegas, we're never going to know it. Because Noam,
like
business owner, yeah, but you'd say it, because you can't deny it here. It's so obvious.
No,
you'll say, look, we do okay.
What is with Jews? Why do you all?
He's got to count the money in your wallet.
I'm not counting money. I'm not counting money.
Can you put Dan in touch with your accountant and just let him know
about this stuff?
I'm not counting money. I'm saying, you know, you seem to downplay the rivers of cash that are flowing into this place.
Estuaries.
I don't say that with.
Natterman just wants to see the tax returns.
Listen,
I don't want to see anything. I'm happy for Noah.
I'm going
to
tell you quite honestly, the Cellar, the comedy businesses where we, you know, we buy low, sell high, buy jokes low, sell them high, buy low, sell high. They're doing very, very well.
Yeah,
the Olive Tree is a money pit.
Is it?
It's a money pit.
No, well, Jared is skeptical.
It's a wonderful place, but we charge very little for the food and drink and. Whatever. And there's a lot of very high costs. And the Fat Bad Pussycat does okay. But I wouldn't be able to, like, really live on it with my family, but it does all right. And Vegas is losing a lot of money. But as we expected. We have to pay back all the costs and everything. Right.
Yeah. But the Vegas audience, like, you know, are you happy with the growth
business
so far?
Business is actually better than we thought it would be.
A lot of the people, the feedback they get is that this doesn't happen. Like, a lot of people were very excited to see how many locals.
Yeah.
That was a big deal to them.
Yeah.
And also, what you don't even realize is that how big a deal paying for parking is in Vegas.
Yeah, I know.
And the fact that they have free parking at the Rio helps to get people there.
Can I tell you a Ron Bennington story?
Sure.
So, this is a huge relief to me. So, I was doing the lineups with Esty.
Yeah.
For Vegas?
For New York.
Okay.
And I saw Ron Bennington was like, I don't know, 3-4 spots or something. I said, Ron is doing stand-up? And he's like, yeah. And I said, listen, has anybody ever seen Ron? I'm like, has anybody ever seen him do stand-up before? And they're like, you said you love him. I said, yes, I've heard him on the radio. I think he's fantastic. But I never saw him do stand-up. And I know various people who are really good, like, we know some people are really, really funny, but they die on stage. So I frantically go to YouTube to try to find a Ron Bennington stand-up set.
Yeah.
Nothing. There's some stuff with him.
Elusive.
Well, there's some stuff with him doing like conversations with, you know, what I know that he's awesome at. Mm. I said, oh shit, Esty, this is, what the fuck have you gotten me into here? Because if he doesn't do well, then we have a major diplomatic
sure
issue on our hands, like major. But he killed.
Yeah. Well, I saw him on brunch, killed there too.
Killed.
I told Dan that. I go, what could be easier than walking up and doing stand-up? Remember we talked about that the other day.
Did you?
Yeah, it was at the brunch show. And I go, you just walk up there, you think of funny things, and you say it.
That's right.
What's so
hard? So simple.
What is so hard about that?
You're absolutely
right. I don't know why comedians whine, like, oh, I don't know what. Just go up, think of something funny, and everybody will laugh.
That's it.
Simple.
It's pretty simple.
It's like Steve
when you
Martin.
Put it that way.
Yeah. You just walk up and you're like, oh, I just thought of this. Yeah. Isn't this funny?
Sure.
And then everybody starts laughing and clapping.
Yeah.
It seemed to work pretty well at brunch.
Yeah.
There's nothing about that story that you find insulting or anything, right?
Because
No. But I mean, like, I was really worried of what am I going to do? But killing.
Murdering.
So yeah, you know, it's true. So my question is, why haven't you been doing stand-up? Why haven't you been performing here in the last 10 years?
I stayed away from nightclubs for a long time because of, my addictive personality.
Ah.
And now I'm at the point like, yeah. Well, people asked me to come back and do stuff, so I did that. But yeah, when I used to, I had my own club in Florida. And it was not the best for me at the time. But even then, you just walk up. And Dan knows this. It's the easiest thing in the world. You walk up, you say funny things, and everybody starts laughing and clapping.
Yeah, anyone can do it.
Anybody.
Anybody.
One of the reasons I got out of the music club in the underground, and I don't have an addictive
person. For our listeners, by the way, Ron is kidding.
No.
No.
Are you not kidding?
No.
Well, and I don't have an addictive personality.
Yeah.
Nevertheless, the routine of going, having drinks, whatever it is, I knew this was, as I'm getting older, I said, well, you know, this is not going to be good for me in my 50s, you know?
No. Mm.
And it was one of the reasons I decided to get away from it. I was like, I just needed a couple drinks to get through the night.
You get into the schedule of it.
You just get in that routine, you know?
Yeah.
It's insidious.
Yeah.
It's the same way people get hooked on painkillers or whatever it is. So I know what you're saying.
Yeah, and I literally after like I wanted to, you know, get when I got sober, it was a little too difficult for me. I'm too easy to go, you know what? Maybe you're right. Yeah. Maybe, you know.
So you're worried about it now that you're back?
No, I don't think that I am right now. But I do stay conscious of it. Well, all the time I think about it. But also comedians do not do the kind of drugs that they used to do. You know what I mean? Comedians used to party really hard every night. And there's a whole younger generation that just focuses on their career, which was not the reason to get into comedy years ago.
So I've had this situation before where somebody I knew was on the wagon or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Or they're cutting down and they're kind of holding it together for a while. And all of a sudden I see them with a drink.
They're back.
They're back.
So what do you do?
What do I do?
Well, Ron, you write your living will, if you will, or a power of attorney, or what is Noam authorized to do to stop you from drinking?
No, I'm a person who thinks it's up to each person to do whatever they do. I mean, you know, you're not going to slap chocolate cake away from somebody because they have diabetes or something.
Well,
you know?
I would if they asked me to.
Really?
If they said to me, Dan, I really would appreciate it if every time you see me with the chocolate cake, like that episode of the Flintstones, where Fred went to that group where they said, if we see you with food, we're going to take it out of your mouth.
Yeah, but that was the Flintstones.
Do you have a friend like that? I'm with Ron. I let the werewolf right out of the closet at midnight. He asked me to let him out. I let him out. But you promised. No, that's okay.
If Ron, if you want me to...
This happened to me, actually. I went back to Penn State with a bunch of like old college buddies. One of the guys came back. He was like, I'm not drinking. We're like, good for you. We're happy for you. And then he started drinking non-alcs. He got through six of them. Mm-hmm. And then we're at the bar later that night, and I bought a bunch of shots. And then all of a sudden, he's taking one of the shots. And people were like, what the fuck are you doing, man? And I was like, that's not my responsibility. He's an adult. He made the decision. This is...
What I'm saying, if he says to you with no uncertain terms...
If you see me with one...
If you see me with a drink, you are authorized... To use all necessary force.
That's a person that's not ready to be back in the surroundings to me. Like, that's a person that shouldn't
be. But I'm
that's not your response. You're not their parent.
No, but you're a concern.
Of course,
I would offer Ron that service if he wants it.
I don't think that you would be able to keep drugs and alcohol away from me.
It probably not.
I think I would be able to say, Dan, stop it.
Well, I went through this kind of thing with a musician one time who was drinking and drinking, and I loved him. He was drinking like a whole bottle or more of Jameson a night, and finally, and you know, and alcohol was free for them.
Mm-hmm.
So then I said, well, no more free. You're going to have to pay for your alcohol.
Okay.
And then I was making a fortune off this guy. No, but he didn't cut back. Yeah. So finally I said, I'm not giving you any more alcohol. I think I felt like a drug dealer.
Yeah.
So he brought a flask.
Yeah.
So it was
futile. Well, that's kind of what you're saying is like, yeah. You know, you tell a friend to hit it out of your hand, you're just displacing the blame. You
that's
know
exactly
that you're
right.
Not going to be able to do it. Like, if you have to say that to a friend, you're a bad friend because you're making them partly responsible for your problem.
Jared Fried, now back in your frat days, you tell me you never said to your friend, dude, do not let me fuck this chick.
Yeah, then he shook his head and he said, yeah, no, I got you, buddy. And then all of a sudden, I'm knee deep in a fat chick.
I don't think Jared Fried has ever said those words.
I'm going to fuck this chick. That's always my motto.
So I'm on my feed today, just before I see, I saw two headlines. I said, what is going on here? The first headline is, this is Sarah Huckabee Sanders continues her White Tears tour despite being Satan's mouthpiece. Whoa.
It's a harsh
then
one.
Michelle, my next thing on my feed. And this is Jezebel. This is, you know, pretty major.
Jezebel's.
But it's.
That's
but
a
it's,
feminist
it's,
rag.
It's very, okay, very. Yeah,
but, it's not, but it's not Screw Magazine. Anyway, Michelle Wolf compares Ivanka Trump to herpes, which is rude to herpes.
And I'm like, oh my.
What has come of, what are we living in now?
Well, this is Jezebel.
What do you think about this whole,
no.
Are those both Jezebel?
No, one is Jezebel and the other one is The Root. But I'm just, but they're on my
the Root?
Feed. So, oh.
Yeah,
so
they're great.
So they're
a good band.
So yeah. It's, you know, it's ubiquitous. It's serious distribution here. I don't have any like a boutique feed.
Well, I think Michelle Wolf is joking. She's telling a joke. And the other one was what? Sarah Sanders?
Yeah,
but Michelle Wolf's joke is then taken and made into
something about her.
Something about
no, I think you're not. But the head to say
that's the headline. Yeah,
Michelle's a comedian. She says whatever she wants.
Sure.
And Jezebel said she actually it's actually rude to herpes.
Yeah,
like it's so fucking mean, right? And Sarah Huckabee Sanders. First of all, the entitlement to say anything about anybody white, right, is obviously troubling to anybody who wants to think about anything with any kind of rigorous logic. Sarah Huckabee Sanders continues her White Tears tour despite being Satan's mouthpiece. And I'm just thinking that we really are in a new time and place. And I think there is something to this whole civility thing. I think we gotta pull it back a little bit.
Well, where do you think it started?
It didn't start with Trump, although he certainly...
Trump is he's a shit stirrer every single day. You know what I mean? You can't get around the fact that he works like a shock jock. He looks for a fight every day.
Okay, but the earliest I can remember this was George Bush when they had the commercials of him like with the lynching, and then there was demonstrations in here where they had pictures of him with Hitler mustaches and swastikas. And actually, even before that, they were talking about Bill Clinton killing Vince Foster. And
right. The internet. You're going back as far as the internet where everybody said it, but people have said it back since the beginning
and,
of
and,
this
and,
country.
And they were horrible to
ugly.
Obama.
Yeah.
But if you're saying that a tit then justifies a tat, I don't buy that. Just because Trump is a jackass, that I don't see why that turns a person with class into a classless person to say that. I mean, did Ivanka Trump say something like that? Did Sarah Sanders? I mean, I don't know. We got to put this genie back in the bottle. It's not good for the country. I mean, Trump, if they said it just about Trump, I'd be like, well, listen.
Yeah.
But Andy's the president. I don't know.
It feels like anyone who writes these things are too emotional to have the conversation to fix anything. Like on both sides. It's too much emotion. There's no, you know, math to it.
Well, and to be clear, you know, Trump made fun of the guy with a disability and he made fun of John McCain. He said he totally lied about Obama and the birther thing. I mean, it's just horrible.
Right.
Horrible resume of things.
But see, that's the thing. It's like if you, like I say, he's like a shock jock. You know what I mean? So. Yeah. That's going to take that level where you are every day. You know what I mean? You just, even if you agree with everything that he's doing, you know that he starts shit every day. That's just his thing.
I just wonder, maybe this is ridiculous. I had a thought that there's a lot of people who have a lot of bitter angriness inside them.
Yeah.
And if you give them a pretext where they can kind of dress it up as virtue, they really fucking show the nastiness inside them. And I, as whatever it is that Trump said that was uncivil, I think there is something about those people who are coming back with such vileness, which has something about what they're carrying around inside them. I mean, I've never had that urge to...
Well, look at the woman who called the police on the girl with the water bottles, selling the water bottles. Like, that woman stinks.
I don't know that story. Tell the story.
Woman's called the police on a little girl, 9-year-old. She was selling waters outside for $2 a water. A little expensive. But she called the police on her and then got caught in video calling the police on a little kid because she didn't have permits. And everyone's like, this woman is obviously an annoying pain in the ass.
Feckless cunt. I know.
Yeah, feckless cunt. She's my old phrase that I always used. But, you know, she's obviously someone that's not someone you would ever want to be talking to or whatever. The internet got a hold of this video and they ruined this person's life is done. Like, everyone went on.
That happens every day now. Every day somebody is on the wrong side of something. But all you had to do is go to any news story and read the comment section. No matter what the news story is, people are not terrific. You know what I mean? They are ugly most
horrible
of the time. Yeah, it isn't even political things that this stuff always comes up with.
As a matter of fact, I remember before Trump won, Amy Schumer had something on the internet. I remember it was, and I remember the comments were just horrible about it.
Hers get comments that are like depressing. Yeah. Like, you can't believe that someone has this type of hate for anyone.
And then the founder of Vox.com refers to Ben Shapiro, who's an intellectual and always, you know, a high road guy. He doesn't say anything insulting to anybody. Makes reasoned arguments. Conservative. He's allowed to be conservative.
Sure.
They compared him to the Jew that brought the other Jews onto the train. And this is a guy that works for Vox. It's a serious editor.
Yeah.
This is all. You can't blame that on Trump.
Well, yeah, I mean, the fact is, like you're saying, that it doesn't. I mean, at some point, we would expect the president to take charge of that and try to bring people together. But he is certainly a divider.
Yes.
He certainly says the other side. When he's the president of the United States, he refers to half the country as the other side. And I think a lot that what he did with...
Well, Hillary called half the country deplorables.
Yeah, but she wasn't the president of the United States
at
that point.
But don't downplay that, because that's serious, too.
No, but when you get to be the president of the United States, and you saw it in Obama, and quite frankly, I think you saw it in George Bush, where he was saying, I want to bring everybody together. Whether they mean it or not, you know what I mean? The most that we're talking about in manners is the way you speak in public, not the way you...
I'm not trying to argue because I actually agree with you.
Yeah.
I totally agree with you. But what I don't want to do is I can't concede that in my mind is really relevant. I think people are using that as an excuse. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
They're using that as a full excuse to just say whatever the fuck they want about anybody.
Yeah.
And I think it's horrible.
But the way the internet works is also to blame for it, because you don't get retweets for meh comments.
Right.
Only extremes get retweets. That's the only way you get heard on the internet. So what you read, those titles make sense to me, because if you're for that article, you're clicking it. If you're against that article, you're clicking it. If you're in the middle, you don't. But a lot of people aren't in the middle.
I think you're onto something.
I think it is
the business model of
the clicks.
I'm making the air quotes of journalism today. Which is that you got
to
get people to click.
Well, you know,
you have to tweet.
That's a horrible business
model. You can only love and hate on Twitter. You cannot be in the middle. You can't be, that movie was okay, doesn't get a retweet.
There is no money unless you can get people to click on it.
That movie fucking sucks gets retweets. And I just know it because I've worked with a bunch of companies, like web places, that they go, okay, what's the title for this? And I'll be like, it's called this. And they're like, that won't play.
Yeah.
We need a better title. And then you figure out, I learned over the course of years writing on these like dude bro sites, I knew exactly what title. It wouldn't even be what the article. I once wrote a bar article called Top 10 Ways to Make Sure to Guarantee You'll Fuck Tonight. And then the whole thing was about how stupid the person was who clicked that article. You actually think I know how to guarantee you a way to fuck? So it was just a trick playing on these whole, like, the clickbait thing that's going on. Like, you have to do
that. I do think there's a place for reasoned discourse. I mean, no one brought up Ben Shapiro, who's I mean, I wouldn't say he's in the center, but he's,
no, he's
fairly
a,
well-reasoned, and sometimes he sides with Trump, and sometimes he doesn't side with Trump.
Well, I think radio podcast is really where is the best conversations are had because you can hear people weighing over things. You can hear us thinking about
Ben Shapiro was a child genius, okay? He gets up there and he debates with serious intellects in the country. He went to Harvard Law School.
Yeah.
He was not pro-Trump. He's softened a little bit on Trump because Trump's, I think, governed more conservatively than anybody expected him to. But there's no, but to compare him to a Nazi, more than a Nazi, but like a Jew traitor in the Nazis, and this is by some, this is, there's something gone wrong.
Well, the point I was making about Ben Shapiro is that he's, his discourse is fairly reasonable, and he's not one side or the other, and he has a large, large following. The point being is that there is a play, there is a market for non-extreme discourse.
Yeah, but the guy calling him a Nazi sympathizer, all that does is take his, make anything that's nuanced of his, it makes him a Nazi. That takes you out of the conversation. It's an unfair fight method.
To the people that listen to that.
Ron wants to say something.
But it's the reason why we're talking about Ben Shapiro now. You're not saying, hey, I've read Ben Shapiro. He's got some ideas I want to share with you. You know what I mean? You're not going to do that. It just doesn't happen. On any conversation, what has to happen is he either has to be attacked or is he attacking somebody before we talk about it.
And then here's an irony, is that a guy, what was the name of the guy who got fired from the Atlantic, conservative writer? And it'll come to me, because he had written something pro-abortion, pro-life, like 15 years earlier. He actually gets fired. Making a logical argument that's pro-life, that's over the line, even if you did it 15 years ago. But saying these horrible things.
Well, you better hope the posse's not coming for you. That's the thing. Like right now, there's people walking around with pitchforks and you know, lit flames, and they're looking for people on the internet to take down. Well, you can't get too successful.
Lucky Jared, lucky for you and I, our comedy acts don't necessarily delve in to the controversial stuff. You're more about the chicks, I think, right? And banging.
Love banging, love chicks. You know, and penis, farts, all the heady stuff.
You know, and I by design, I avoid, like, I have some interesting ideas, I think, about certain topics, but I wouldn't say them on stage because I'm trying to keep it.
Yeah, but you had a bit in Vegas that worked differently there than I've seen it here.
What's the bit said?
The bit you have about not my president.
Well, that
became politicized based on how the audience received.
Yes, that works for any audience because, well, the bit is for the listeners.
It doesn't get a lot of laughs.
Where I say, where I say that you go online and people tweet about Trump. They tweet, "Not my president," and I say, "But here's the thing, though. Yeah, he is." And then I said, "Saying not my president is not going to change anything. If it actually worked every month, I'd say not my visa bill, or if I go to the doctor, I'd say not my blood test results."
But do you agree that got a different reaction there?
Well, I agree that some people think that it's a pro-Trump joke.
Sure.
When I say, here's the thing, though. Yeah, he is. He is the president. And people that are pro-Trump might say, yeah, damn right he's the president. Yeah, he's one.
Two cowboy hats went thrown into the air. It was crazy. Guy got on his horse and giddy up.
All I'm really saying is making the very uncontroversial proposition that Donald Trump is the elected president of the United States. I'm saying nothing more than that.
But you sound like a Nazi sympathizer to me. It just seems like you're walking Jewish children to the gas chamber.
Yeah.
Yes,
like Jerry Lewis did in The Day the Clown Cried.
But that joke is purposely designed not to take any side, you know.
I think it's a little bit pro-Trump in that joke.
Yeah.
It's only pro-Trump because the standards of being pro-Trump nowadays are so low. All you have to do is not, every time you mention the word Trump, spit. And you're pro-Trump.
No, I'm going to tell you
why. That's how low the standard is for being pro-Trump.
It's pro-Trump.
If you can say Trump's name without barfing, you're considered a pro-Trump zealot.
It's pro-Trump in my mind because you are taking issue with the anti-Trump people who are saying he's not my president, and you're pointing out that that's ridiculous. You anti-Trumpers are saying something ridiculous. He is your president, so that's why I see it as slightly pro-Trump. Or slightly anti-Trumpers.
Maybe very, very light. I mean, basically what I'm saying is he's president.
So, but who's the brunt of that joke? It's the anti-Trumpers.
They happen to be the brunt because they're saying something that is false.
Right, right.
Although I know what they don't mean it literally. They mean it figuratively when they say not my president. But in any case, basically I'm using it as a stepping stone to get to the part where I say, not my blood test results, hashtag never herpes. Right. You know, that's...
So, Ron, what is it? How does it feel to be back on stage doing stand-up?
Yeah, it's fun.
He's back, folks.
That's
it? It's fun, yeah.
Well, how long had you not been doing stand-up?
Oh, it's been, like, since the late 90s when I got sober. And then I went back, I did some sets at the Stand. It was Big J and Christine that were pulling me into shows, and it was, like, more and more fun. And then a couple weeks ago, they asked me to if I wanted to come here. I had no idea that you were so negative about it, though, Noam. It would have felt a lot more pressure when I came in.
No, but it's because there's a lot of guys on the wagon, as Noam pointed out, and they come here. They come. They continue to do comedy. So now,
sobriety is different for everybody. Yeah. You know what I mean? And like I said, I was in Florida, had a big radio show, and it wasn't just alcohol. It was drugs and alcohol. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I needed some time to, you know. And then once I got away from it, I'm like, I'm doing radio. This is fun. You know what I mean? Like, my whole life is always... You know, just been fooling around like this.
It all clicks with me now, because I can't tell you, when I first saw you, I'm like, I said, Ron Bennington is fantastic. Like, I remember, like, I didn't understand. I said, why is he not famous? Like, so I said, you were just kind of, you were not being ambitious.
Well, I've never really been ambitious anyway. You know what I mean? I've always done my own thing, and I've always had a show for a long time. So, you know, I've had a way to express myself. And what do I want to do? Go to Akron and do the weekend? You know what I mean? Like, it's not that. That's never been all that interesting.
If you had one drink, one... would you be off to the races? Are you saying you cannot have one drink?
Well, yes. But I actually, when my appendix burst, I wouldn't take any morphine. And the doctors were trying to talk me into it. And I'm like, dude, I'm fucking telling you right now, I'm not going to do morphine. And they're like, you don't have to worry about it because we'll only give you enough for a couple of days. I go, I'm going to be a fucking different person in 3 days. And he goes, well, I won't subscribe. I go, I don't need to get morphine from you. I know where to fucking get morphine. So people don't, you know, each thing you just have to say in your life, do I want, you know, what kind of life do I want to live? And I've already said to myself, I don't want to go back and get high anymore.
Well, how did you deal with the pain with the appendix?
It was fucking horrible. I passed out a couple times. It was really, really difficult. And I've talked to people that are in the program. They're like, dude, you can't do that. Sometimes that even leads you. But it was a burst appendix, and it happened right away. I didn't have time to call anybody and say, you know, coach me through this. I still don't know whether I... Here's what happened. At a certain point, I said to my wife, I go, I can't... You know, stand this pain anymore. I'm like 4 or 5 hours in, and I go, I'm gonna take the morphine. And she says, okay. And then I said, well, right away, I go, where's my, you know, my iPad? Because when the morphine, this is a swear to God, a true story. When the morphine drips, I'm gonna hit it as Sweet Nothing from the Velvet Underground comes on. So I'll time it exactly. And then I thought, what kind of fucking sane person would do that? That's an insane thought, right? You're in pain, but right away you're thinking, oh, isn't it going to be feel great when this is fucking falling backwards? So that's, I stopped myself again. Just didn't do it because I'm thinking like a fucking addict right away.
Unbelievable. And how old were you when you first got into this stuff?
Drugs? 14.
14.
Yeah, I was
14. Is it in your family?
Well... Yeah, I mean, it's not only in my family, but, you know, it was in my neighborhood. It was everybody that I ever knew. You know what I mean? Everybody partied, and I started doing drugs and drinking at a very early age. And when I look back on it now, I'm like, oh, right away, you drank like an alcoholic. You did drugs like a drug addict.
Because quite often, is it like a biochemical or genetic
100%, to this? I think it is.
I can't. I mean, I have two drinks, and I'm already nauseous and...
Yeah, that's...
You know, I can't...
Like, my wife, who, you know, she doesn't really drink, but I know, like, if she and I both have two drinks, I'm like, oh, I'm great, sweetheart. And she's, like, just getting started. Like, it, like, lights up in her that she... And she said to me in the old days, she's like... I said, well, when do you feel like you've had enough? She goes, I don't. Like, there's just... She always just wants another one, you know? So she stays away from it.
Literally, I get nervous if I see somebody nursing a drink. I'm just like...
And I have to believe that's just, you know, the way all sorts of drugs affect people differently.
Yeah.
Alcohol affects people differently.
Well, people, I mean, some people call it a disease, but I do think it's like an allergy. I think it's the same way. Like if somebody says, I can't eat shrimp, you're not going to go, well, just have a little bit of shrimp. You know what I mean? And I don't know what it's like to start breaking out after I've eaten cherries or something or peanuts, yeah. But it happens to people.
Ironically, I used to be allergic to shrimp.
Yeah.
And I just ate a little, and yeah. I'm not allergic anymore.
I think
it actually went away.
You know, my lactose intolerance, I think, is gone.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I had ice cream the other night. No problem. Didn't have to run home.
You know what? You guys are right. I can start getting high. I really can get high. Thank you so much for this conversation.
No, I'm not saying that you're going to get over your addiction. Like I got over my lactose intolerance. But in any case, I had some ice cream.
Oh, good for you, Dan.
No duty. In any case.
Go ahead, Dan. What do you want to say?
Well, I don't know. I thought maybe you had another topic.
No. Anyway, I'm very, very happy, and I hope you're going to stay here permanently now at the Cellar. Mm-hmm. And I want to see. I think this is terrific. Like,
what about Vegas? We need good people out in Vegas.
I'll go to Vegas. What I'll do is book like a big interview out there, so that Sirius will send me out first class.
Anytime you, know what
I
mean? You want.
So I always have to just book something wherever I want to go, or else I have to sit in the back like cattle.
So you can do your show anywhere.
Yeah, you can do your show anywhere. But the only way I want to fly now is on their money. I don't want to.
Well, no one would normally pay for your flight if you did the club out there.
He's not going to put me in first class.
No.
I might if you can keep quiet about it. To keep it between
well,
us.
Well, I asked Noam, because what I was going to. Last week we were talking about how you should book the Vegas room, not last minute, but maybe 2 weeks in advance, because comics might just happen to, David Tell might just say, oh, I happen to have a free weekend. Normally I wouldn't, but it happens. And I don't think, looking at the schedule, it seems like it's booked out quite a ways.
I don't know. I Liz and Esty are taking care of a lot of that stuff.
And they're going out to L.A. to see those people too, right?
Yeah.
That should be cool.
But have you thought about like making an offer to like say Dave Attell, for example? Say, Dave, you know, if you ever want to go to Vegas last minute, it's a week.
I think Attell's going to do Vegas. He actually wants to come to Vegas.
Okay. But like
Michael Che is doing it next week.
Make it known to people that are the people that draw, if you want. Hey, even if it's a week before, let us know, and we'll send you. If you'd be willing to do that.
Absolutely, I'd be willing to do
that. Even if you had to have an extra person on the show, it would cost you more money, but that might be the only way to get big names is if it's last minute.
I'm fine with that.
And as a showcase club, a headliner club couldn't do that, because if David Tell were to do a headlining club, they'd want to know months in advance to promote, but a club using a showcase format.
Well, Attell and Jeff Ross already dropped in.
Right.
And
you could have drop
in.
You could have last
in,
minute shit. You know. So it's a lot more flexible in that regard.
Yeah. Anyway, what else? What else, Ron? What's on your mind these days?
I'm happy with life. I'm going to tell you the truth.
He's got grandpapa soon, right?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to be a grandfather in... by the end of this month.
How old are you?
Grandfather. I'm 37. I'm a very beat up and beat down 37, but I stay with it. But how old are your kids?
He's had
6, 5, and 1.
Yeah.
And I'm 55.
Late. Yeah. 55. Well, here's the thing. You'll never make it.
I know.
To be a grandfather.
I know. Thanks.
No, I think he will.
He's going to eat with me for
but you know, it'll be the kind of thing of like, let's go see grandpa at the fucking home.
Yeah, and, he won't be coherent.
Yeah, there's a little
I'm not going to enjoy my grandkids.
But Manny will knock up a waitress at some point.
Yeah, that's true.
And
I have this, I hope that there's going to be some major breakthrough in medical science.
Really?
As I get, I know it's not likely, but it's not ridiculous.
Yeah.
And that will somehow change the prognosis for what it's like to be 80 or 85.
I want to be uploaded onto the cloud, like in Black Mirror, and then you can talk to your grandkids, like you'd be on the computer screen as an uploaded file.
My father's 91, and it's difficult. It's a tough thing. It's a tough existence, you know. And he and my mom still have their house. They're still living there. But every day, it's a tough thing to make it through the day. But you would love him because he watches Fox News the way Belichick watches Game Take. And he'll call me all the time. And what I'll do is I'll just I'll do that thing like if you ever had an old dog where you just put your wrist up and let him bite it for a while, you know. I'll come up with a bad point that he could just beat me up on it. You know what I mean?
Notice, Ron, it had no interest in telling you how old he was.
That's all right. Now, just so you know, my take on Fox News, because
I'm 59.
You're 59.
Yeah.
I think Fox News, and I watched Fox News for years. I find it unwatchable.
And all the news. All the news is unwatchable, and yet incredibly, like, I'll go back and forth and watch them both just to see them both acting crazy.
I used to feel Fox basically got a bum rap, and now I think they absolutely deserve it. And I'm pretty sure I know the reason. And actually, I spoke to somebody at Fox who was quite anti-Trump, who actually told me I was right about this. When Roger Ailes died, they lost the balance. Roger Ailes was a conservative, but apparently he did value an honest debate. Well, he was not a fraud, and now it seems to be run by hacks.
Well, he was the guy who brought in the news team that they have, the actual journalists, because most of these networks, I don't think I would say anyone at MSNBC is a journalist. I don't know about CNN, but I can't think of his name, the guy in the daytime.
Shepard Smith?
Yeah. He's a real journalist.
Yeah.
And he, you know, he moves away from the rest of them. He doesn't walk lockstep.
Even O'Reilly's show. Now O'Reilly was a blowhard and all those things. But to a guy who likes to see an honest debate, O'Reilly's show was interesting. Mm-hmm. He wasn't like Hannity, where you couldn't believe anything out of his mouth, and there was no stories. And Laura Ingraham. They're untethered. They're just advocates with an agenda. Yeah. O'Reilly, if he had an opinion on one thing, he'd say, "Get me the smartest person who disagrees with me. I want to have it out."
Right.
So I like that. You know, there's nothing like that on Fox now.
Well, with O'Reilly, it was everything. You know, but the rapes. You have to, you know, go back.
Yeah, but
to
that's I get that. But I'm saying as far as now on MSNBC, I listen to most of the time I listen to my car.
Yeah.
On Sirius, Brian Williams' show is quite good. I don't know if you heard it.
Yeah, I mean, he's on late at night. He's on like 11:30 at night. I don't like how flowery he gets about stuff. I think he's a big fan of Brian Williams and likes to think of himself as, you know, this person who's being historical instead of delivering the news. But that's all he'll do is have somebody else come on. It's not like any of these guys chase stories or have any idea what they're talking about, you know? They're literally...
And then, of course, I love Joy Reid.
You do.
No, I'm kidding.
Ron Bennington, what are your thoughts on that Hispanic woman that's causing quite a stir? What's her name?
Ocasio-Cortez?
No.
Rick Ocasio. That was unbelievable. I can't believe it took this many years.
Alexandra
Ocasio-Cortez.
I don't know much about her other than this upset just happened right away and a lot of young people like her, but it seems like we always get that kind of Bobby Kennedy person who pops up for a little while and then goes away.
Well, she's on the abolish ICE
and abolish private property
bandwagon. Well, I don't know that she's gone quite
socialist.
That far. Well, she calls herself a democratic socialist, whatever
what does that
means.
Mean?
Well, her she wants free education, housing is a right, which I guess means free housing if you can't afford it.
But we have a lot of those things already. I mean, we have free schooling with elementary.
She wants free higher education.
Right. But, I mean, if you're talking about...
Which I'm completely against.
When I was a kid, you didn't go in debt to go to college. You know what I mean? Something happened in the last 30, 40 years where suddenly it's expensive and difficult to get into college.
But a lot of people didn't go to college back. Now it's expected that everybody goes to college so they can study something that they will, in 90% of the cases, never use.
That's interesting that people would say that colleges are liberal when that is a weird thing to do. With kids to get them a debt. Like, I think it makes more young people conservative because it has to work for them. They're $70,000, $80,000 in debt. I got a producer, $100,000 in debt right now.
Let me tell you, I actually quite agree with you. My father went to Columbia, even though he dropped out, on the GI Bill.
Right. That's the way my dad went to school.
And a lot of people got a free education on the GI Bill. Nobody looks back at that as some sort of socialist handout.
Right.
And a lot of people used to go to City College in New York, which was free for a long time.
The GI Bill is not... I mean, they earned it. That was part of their pay for being in the Army.
No, I don't know if that
not
was...
Not at the time.
No,
that happened after World War II. What are we going to do with all these guys? We got all these guys came back. What are we going to do with them?
But what I'm saying is the notion of a nation paying for the higher education of its citizens, it can be quite cost-effective, I think, for the nation.
Yeah, assuming they're not studying art history and stuff that nobody...
Fair enough.
Most people go to college, whatever they're learning, they're not going to be using in later life.
All right.
I mean, I think that's fair to say.
And then the other part,
is an extreme case of not using what you learned in school. But the other part of it,
I suspect, and the reason it's become so expensive is because there's so much money available. I mean, basic economics. If you start loaning millions of dollars, they raise the tuition.
Exactly right.
So nobody's sure. You know, I don't know what the answer to that is. But if there were no more student loans, which I'm not advocating, you would see tuition just go into a free fall.
No, I would agree with that. And I don't think it should be as expensive. And I agree with you that at least the first couple of years should be community college. I don't know why a freshman needs to go across the country and live there. State colleges were pretty cheap when I was a kid. And you could pretty much drive up there. I think
the SUNY system is still reasonable.
The SUNY system is still in New York. I think it's still like $18,000, $20,000 a year, something along those lines. I think maybe a little less.
Well, that kind of debt. I mean, I know waitresses who have 30, 40 grand in credit card debt. So yeah, so we agree about that stuff. But
what about abolishing ICE?
That's ridiculous. The whole thing is ridiculous. I've had so many arguments. Listen, I compared on my Facebook page there was that thing that went around where you could hear the screams of the children in Texas, and I compared the Republicans who. What's the matter? I compared the Republicans to subjects in a Milgram experiment. You know the Milgram experiment, where for those who know, where you were administering the shock. The subjects were administering the shock to somebody behind a wall, and they would hear the screams. And a guy in a lab coat would say, "It's okay, another one," until they actually thought they were killing them, and a tremendous number of people would do it. And that's what I felt. The Republicans were kind of like they're hearing the screams, and they're still supporting the president. So I'm not soft on this at all. However, when I talk about this with people constantly. I ask people a very basic question, and they refuse to answer, which is, what would you do at the border when somebody arrives illegally with a child?
Yeah, well, first of all, how long have we even had ICE? I don't ever remember even hearing about that.
Well, I think 2003, but what it did is it took the INS doesn't exist anymore.
Apparently ICE doesn't even do the stuff at the border. Like, I think it's all bullshit. But
I think ICE goes after the people that are illegal aliens that have already come here and that commit crimes whilst they're here. I think ICE goes after them and deports them.
And they also save lives. I've heard whatever. I mean, we are... nation just with totally uninformed people just pontificating about what should happen.
Well, these are difficult things, right? These are difficult things that we expect a really quick answer with.
Do you think anybody who's calling for the end of ICE could tell you what ICE does? I mean, they don't know.
Yeah, and why doesn't it show up on the news? Why do we have these shows that aren't really trying to educate people? Why wouldn't you say... tonight, there's a documentary on for an hour.
Nobody would watch.
Nobody would watch.
And even if we're joined by Alan Havey, by the way.
And why the call to abolish ICE as opposed to if ICE is doing certain things that we don't like, wouldn't the call be to reform ICE? Or wouldn't that be why the immediate jump to abolish ICE as opposed to let's fix ICE if, in fact, it needs fixing? And you know, I don't know much about... what they do is known. I'm one of the ignorant masses.
Well,
but
I with all this stuff, I find myself thinking.
Well, we had a guy here last week who claimed he was joking that it would be justified to shoot
because it was a terrorist organization.
ICE agents because they're a terrorist organization.
That I think much of this comes down to the fact that we have huge generations of people now. Born into very, very privileged, even the poor among us, very, very privileged time in history where they've never really seen anything bad happen and it's all in history books and it leads them to a certain complacency about things that somebody, my father's generation, or even my generation who kind of still was in the ripple of that generation, who had seen World War II and Korean and death and Soviet Union. They were much more hard-nosed about the world. for instance, the idea in 1960, whenever it was, that it was okay for a nuclear missile to be in Cuba pointing at America, the most left-wing among the in the country said, well, of course, that's not acceptable. And John F. Kennedy, a good liberal, was ready to bring the world almost to the brink of nuclear disaster because this was just unacceptable. Yet today, North Korea can hit Los Angeles, and I bet you an overwhelming majority of the Democratic Party would be like, well, we could live with that. And well, what's the difference? But, same threat.
But you, but the president went over and hugged the guy and said that he's a good guy. He looked into his eyes. I don't think we have to worry about him.
I don't think any liberal would say, no, that's okay.
Yeah, they do.
They said,
why you have to go?
I'm doing a show at your club.
Oh, no.
So we have a less informed guest now.
No. Can I just say one thing? I want to say one thing to Ron. Yeah. I don't think you cared about what I said before. I think you understood exactly where I was coming from. I am so happy that you become part of the family of the place. I'm such a huge fan of yours.
Thank you very much.
To see you stand up.
Yeah.
And I couldn't be a happier outcome.
Thank you for having
us.
Me. I really appreciate it.
Honestly.
Fun.
I'm sure Ron was not insulted by your initial skepticism. That's only normal. You hadn't seen him perform.
Was it skepticism? I'd never
well,
seen
you,
him.
You know, you'd want to see somebody that you're putting on at your club. That's
no.
only natural.
While he's still listening, Ron, I don't think Dan's quite getting it. It was that if it didn't work out, it would be a very uncomfortable situation, and that's why, whatever.
Well, but
it worked out great.
But like most things with Noam, they tend to work out.
Yes.
Noam has been lucky so far. Well, hopefully that will continue.
Because he was raised a privileged child. He never saw any ugliness.
I was raised privileged. Alan was there.
Yes. That was part of the upbringing.
Well, I met Noam. He was already an adult.
But, yes. I knew him when he was a young man.
Alan met me when I was still in college. Exact change.
Yes. He had a group. He wanted a name. It called Exact Change.
Yeah, we had to do it. Me and Outside Steve's brother.
You had a band.
We had a little duo, like a Simon and Garfunkel-ish type thing, and we didn't have a name for ourselves, and Alan named us Exact Change, and we liked that name.
Yeah, I was coming back from a gig in Jersey, going through a toll booth. I saw the sign. It stuck. That's where I got it from.
All right. Do you think Ron was upset?
What about Turnpike North?
Do you think Ron was upset?
No, not at all.
Okay.
Not at all. Why would he be upset? It was a perfectly, as I said, logical concern.
Is he a liberal?
No, this is what happened.
No, that's not to do with that.
Liberals are all upset, so.
You're a liberal.
Yeah, I'm upset.
Dan is actually quite conservative.
Well, anyway. I'm more in the middle. Maybe you'd characterize me as conservative.
You're not in the middle. In the middle, Dan.
Well, I don't know. I think the middle has moved.
That's what my father always said.
You know, so that, I mean.
Is there a middle anymore?
Well, there is a middle. Whether anybody's whether it's occupied or not is another story.
I think I'm
it exists. I don't know if anybody's living there.
I think media has polarized us.
I think I'm in the middle, which many liberals would consider me to be an arch conservative, if that makes any sense. But I think they don't even know how far right it does go with some people. And I think I'm quite in the middle.
Yeah. Well, we've seen how far right it goes. We have Nazi marches.
Yeah.
You know. So that's pretty far right.
Well, I mean, even how far right it goes, even with...
Among sane people.
Yeah, among sane people, you know. I feel pretty much in the middle. Like, I live a pretty tolerant lifestyle and whatever it is, but I do believe in government staying out of my business and things like that, you know.
But on the other hand, gun control poses no problem for you, generally speaking.
I'm not a pro-gun guy. I'm skeptical that gun control would have any meaningful... I mean, it would save some lives, but it certainly wouldn't save the kind of lives that everybody's thinking it would save. I think it's people want them, they're going to get them. But I'm not like a Second Amendment guy or anything like that.
And do you abortion? You're down with abortion, generally speaking. You know.
I'm having trouble.
Are you pro-choice?
I've committed.
Since you've had two children, do you have different feelings about that?
I've been responsible for aborted children. But the older I...
Not solely. You didn't talk a woman into having an abortion, did you?
No.
Okay.
You know, that's another part of that. Unbelievably, no woman ever... whatever.
Never a fight.
I never had a woman... Because it happened a few times. I never had a woman who, like, saw an opportunity to get money or anything like that. I always was treated very decently in those situations. In any event. And I never tried to talk them into it. But... As I get older, as I saw our last ultrasound of our three-month-old fetus sucking its thumb, it's troubling.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, listen, I believe it comes down to the choice of the woman having the baby. But you can't tell me that's not a life in there.
If it's a life in there, why does she get to choose?
Because it's her body. It's inside her body. It's her choice whether she wants the baby.
I don't know. But I don't think they should overturn Roe versus Wade. But I would not be horrified if they were to force a woman to come to that decision as quickly as possible.
How are they going to do that, though, see?
I don't know. You're right. I mean, you don't want to have close-hanger abortions at any point, but there is something troubling about the whole thing. And I think Roe versus Wade, I always thought this, even when I was a bleeding heart liberal, Roe versus Wade was wrongly decided, because what the hell does Justice Blackmun know about when life begins? I mean, he doesn't know. I mean, science is the enemy of Roe versus Wade, right? Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, I would agree that it was not for the court to decide, but I am.
You agree that science is the enemy of Roe versus Wade?
What do you mean by that? Expand
what I'm saying
on that.
If science is going to tell us anything, it's going to tell us that this is alive and that it can't really be distinguished. In other words, a 6-month-old fetus can either be in an incubator, in which case if you kill it, you'll go to jail for the rest of your life,
right,
or in its mother's womb, in which case the woman has the right to extinguish it.
Right.
Science could not find the justification that the environment changes whether or not this is a human life or not. Science would tell you, no, it doesn't matter whether it's an incubator or in the womb. It's alive, right?
Right.
Roe versus Wade says first trimester, you can't restrict
First trimester, you can't restrict it. Second trimester, I think you have reasonable restrictions. But we know that a lot of 5-month-old and 6-month-old babies are aborted. So that's, and if we look to the end of life to try to decide when life begins, and I'm no expert on this, there is a when your heart stops or when your brain no longer has brain waves, right? And if you were to want to use either of those definitions to say when life starts, it'd be very early in the development.
Absolutely.
Look, there's no right answer. We just have to do what's practical.
Well, there might be a right answer that we just don't have the nerve to. We don't want to face it.
Well, or we look, it's like eating animals. You can make a good case that that's evil, but they just taste too delicious, and it's.
You ever had a baby? You ever have a newborn baby? Fried?
To eat?
Oh, my God.
They are delicious.
Yeah. So tasty.
Well, they might be. I've never had one, but I just think it's a practical matter. You know, it just would be pandemonium and chaos if you couldn't.
Yeah, well, my father used to say always, listen, abortion is murder, and it's a murder we're just going to have to allow. That was, and you can't really argue with that. That was the way he was. He never had he could never pretend that it wasn't alive or anything like that. But he also felt like whatever, you know.
I think about your dad a lot these days.
And what do you think about?
Well, I started this club at the very beginning, and I remember what your father wanted to happen to this club, and it has far exceeded even his wildest dreams.
Which was?
He wanted a place where comedians loved to come and hang out, even if they weren't performing. He wanted this to be a spot where comedians would gravitate to. And mission accomplished, and then some.
Right.
You have 3 rooms here. You have a new room in Las Vegas. You have comedians dying to get in here. There's so many good, young, and not-so-young comedians who are getting into this club.
I still say the older ones are better.
Thank you. Thank you, Dan. I know you're...
Well, I'm thanking me. Well, I mean, I'm complimenting myself because I'm one of the older ones.
I'll tell you, I don't want to interrupt Alan, but I can tell you why they're better. Because the ones who weren't really great dropped out of the business. The ones who stay in and are still older, they're fucking good.
Is the same reason the Jews are smart?
I don't know.
Yeah, because they've been around
the dumb ones converted?
Life culls the litter.
No, if you're a comedian and you, like anything, if you work hard at it and you see what you're doing, change your game a little bit, see what's working, what isn't over years of performing, you become better.
Yeah.
I think it goes with actors, too. Mostly. Depends on the material.
There's some comedians, I don't want to say who they are, but I've seen
them. No, we won't mention names.
Who, a big part of their appeal somehow was related to their youth, to their looks, to their kind of playing on what was trendy at the time, their, you know,
their point of view as a young person.
Yeah, yeah, hooking into pop culture. And a lot of them all of a sudden just stopped becoming funny in a way when they hit 35 or whatever it was. And the other guys were just fucking funny. And then somebody like Alan, you know, a little bit older than I am, it's the same Alan as it was at 25.
Yeah, but...
because you were funny.
New material.
Right, but I'm... Yeah.
Yeah, I don't want people to think...
Well, I find myself...
But you know what I mean,
I
right?
find myself yes. extra motivated because it's bad enough if they say I'm not funny. It's even worse if they say I'm old and not funny. And so I feel extra motivated so that these younger people won't look at me like, oh, my God, is he still doing this? I feel an extra motivation to continue to write so that they won't say this old guy is just kind of giving
you're
up.
You're just funny. Gilbert Gottfried.
But I'm saying I still write because I don't want the younger comics looking at me like, oh, Christ, this joke again?
All right, whatever
now,
it takes.
Granted, I have a lot of old fucking jokes, but I try to continue to write new jokes.
First
because
of all, I can't consider you an old comic somehow.
I don't look at you as an old comic. Well, I don't give a damn what young comedians think. I'm tired of listening to stuff, and I want to change. But I still love connecting with an audience. And I look out in the audience, and you do this too, Dan. Young people laugh at what's funny. It's not because... they only don't laugh at older comedians. They laugh at young comedians, but they laugh at anybody who is funny.
That's right. I walked through.
No, yeah, now. I agree with you there.
I walked through just to go to the bathroom a little while ago. You were on stage. I don't know if you saw me.
No.
And I didn't really hear the joke, but the waiter was, it's a waiter, like 25-year-old waiter, was putting in the order, and I saw he couldn't contain his laughter. And he must have seen you a million times, yeah. You know? And I said, fucking Alan Havey, you know?
Well, you always, you got to throw in something new. And I'm always open to, like, new things happening up there. He was probably laughing at something I was riffing with the audience with. Because that's where you get your biggest laughs.
Yeah.
Something that they know is spontaneous, you know, because it surprises them.
So we're almost at a time. So I saw Gilbert Gottfried did this
yes.
Netflix thing with Mattel yes. and right, yeah. Jeff Ross a couple days ago.
The dueling mics or whatever.
Yeah.
Bumping mics.
He was so...
Well, he's
funny.
One of my favorites. I
mean,
him.
He is a gem, you know? I mean, he is hit or miss because he's, you know, he's really a risk-taker in a way, and he's all in. But he was on, and my God, did I enjoy him. He was just so funny, and he's up in years, right?
When I started in 81, he was the man. It was him and Rick Overton, a few other guys, but Gilbert, since I've been in this business, has always been extremely funny.
I mean, he's really funny.
Yeah. He's
but he
great.
Never works here. Very seldom comes. I mean, he comes here and has wings or whatever, but he doesn't go on stage very often.
He's not doing
he doesn't love stand-up.
Does he put
I
in
don't
the
think.
Veils in?
I don't know.
He
think
doesn't
he
put
does.
The veils in. We'd put him on, of course. But he does, like, when Artie Lang does a show or yeah. Attell does a show, he'll come down for special shows. But I don't think he's, like, a working comic anymore. I don't
no,
know.
He's on the road all the time.
Is he on the road?
Because he's trying to make money. But just to do a set to work shit out, I don't see him doing that. Now,
I didn't know
that's
he goes on the road.
He's on the road. That's so how he makes his money.
He does an hour and a half?
Yeah. He's always doing clubs and shit.
I didn't
know
that. Not in New York, right?
No, but he's on the road. He's going around
the
country.
Anyway.
I try to stay off the road as much as possible. No cruise ships. You know, I have a few road places I work. I come here at Hermosa. And then thank God, I've been getting acting work the last 5-6 years.
You're in Billions? Is that right?
Yeah. So that's nice. So, see, that's what I wanted to do when I started in 81. I wanted to be an actor, and then I lived near the Improv in Hell's Kitchen. I go, these guys get up immediately. They don't have to audition. They don't have to worry about getting a part. They don't have to starve. They're getting up and making people laugh. So,
such a small world, because I remember when the bar was here, you were telling me the story about your friend of yours had written this script for Rounders. It was the greatest script
right.
that you had ever
yeah,
seen.
Yeah, one of the best. I have a friend, Brian, and he and his partner,
Brian Kovelman.
Yeah, I was gonna
no,
use that
way.
You just fucked up the whole story, Dan.
Didn't you say Rounders already?
Yeah.
Well, he already gave it away.
I know, but I'm telling the story.
Go ahead.
So my friend Brian and David, they spent a year writing the script, and I've known Brian since he was 19. He sent it to me, and I sat down, and I'm telling you, I've read a lot of scripts, and I just went through this. It was just compelling, interesting. I called him, I go, you guys are going to sell this. This is one of the best scripts I've ever read. Cole. And it was Rounders. It was Brian Koppelman, David Levine. They've done a lot of films, television, and now they're the showrunners and creators of Billions on TV.
But so then the thing is that it turns out I actually went to college with him.
At Tufts?
At Tufts. I didn't know him at Tufts. He discovered Tracy Chapman, and then who I knew at Tufts, and then we had the same girlfriend. Remember Ann Akins?
Yeah, that was Brian or David?
Brian.
Okay.
I dated her first.
Uh-huh.
And
of course you did.
So it's just like, you know, there's all these...
It's funny how we don't mention comedians, so Ann Akins. You can say her whole name.
I can say Ann Akins.
Okay.
I don't think she'd care.
Okay.
So it's a small...
I had a huge crush on Ann.
Did you?
Yes.
You went to Tufts, too?
No.
No. She was a waitress here.
I went to college here.
Those days, if you had a huge crush on Ann, you would have had her. And, I mean, Alan, nobody could hold a candle to Alan.
No. I'm minding my own business.
Well, maybe because you were
busy?
You were showing forbearance.
Yes.
Yeah, but you could have had her.
I didn't want to have her. I wanted to have a relationship with her, no.
Yeah, and I shouldn't say you could have had her, because she wasn't an easy girl, but I'm just saying that Alan was quite a star and handsome and, you know, whatever.
It's amazing. And now...
He's still handsome.
Thank you. But it is weird when I think about the time that it's gone by. You know, like how many years ago I met you and how long I've been in the business. A lot of these comedians saw me when they were in junior high school. Some of them grade school.
Yeah.
But I still feel green. You know, I still feel like desirable. I still want to improve myself as a comedian. That's why I'm going to Edinburgh in August. I'm going to the Fringe Fest.
Well, and then we got to end. But, you know, as I'm getting older, I think about this, and clearly we all think about it, which is that not everybody ages the same way. And I have friends my age now who I already see them becoming old men.
Yeah.
You could just see it.
How old are you?
I'm 55.
Yeah.
My father never got old. He never, never. Like, if he had maintained his physical appearance, you would not be able to distinguish him from a 30-year-old.
Nope.
Even in his 70s.
His energy was great because he was curious. He liked what he did. And
curious is a good word.
Yes, and that's what Brian is.
Yeah.
Brian Koppelman. He's always been a curious guy, and he's interested in all aspects of life, not just filmmaking or music with Tracy Chapman. He's interested in everything.
Yeah.
And it keeps him young and occupied and... And you're always learning something, and that keeps you young.
So, to end it, I might have told you this story, but, you know, the girl who sings to me sometimes in the Olive Tree, Sasha Allen, she tours with the Rolling Stones now, and she sings Give Me Shelter with the Stones. It's a big deal. And I said, wow, the Stones. Do they still rehearse? Did I tell you this? She says, rehearse? They rehearse. Keith Richards records the rehearsals. Then listens to the recordings, goes back to them, gives them notes on what they, you know, and they're doing the same songs they've been playing with. So here's this guy moving up on 80, I guess. I mean, he's in his 70s and is still taking satisfaction, the song, as seriously as he took it in 1965. And that's why they're still fucking out there. That's
absolutely
why they can still do it.
Any good comedian, like Matteo Lane, just talking to him the other day, after show, he goes back, listens to the recording, takes notes. Not a lot of comedians are doing that.
Yeah.
You know, the comedians that are successful, like Jerry Seinfeld, are working it. They're constantly working and writing new stuff and listening to their things going over. So once you stop, you stagnate, and you can get by with it for a while. I'm sure a lot of rock bands could.
Right.
But they have a standard.
Yeah. You become a hack.
Yes.
I think that's when you become a hack. All right. Thank you, Alan. Thank you, Ron Bennington. Thank you, Dan. Good night, everybody.
Good night.